Good afternoon. Once again, it is One Bell of the Afternoon Watch, and your Captain Joe is up in the captain's chair on Voice of Vashon, Voice of Vashon 101.9 on the FM band, and streamed live all over the world, from Singapore in one side of the world to Stockholm on the other, on voiceofvashon.org. And I can assure you that we have live and loyal and dedicated listeners in all of those places, as well as all the ships at sea and all the stations in between. So it is a beautiful, beautiful spring day here on the magical Isle of Vashon. And it is, however, necessary for me, as I do every week, to recognize the entrance on the binnacle list. The list that was hung on the binnacle in sailing ship days so that the officer of the watch would know how many people he would not have, people who had been put on the binnacle list by the medical officer or the surgeon in those days, that he would not have to work the ship during his watch. That's why it's called the binnacle list then, and why it remains called that today, even in the most modern of ships. It is no longer hung on the binnacle, but the sick list is still called the binnacle list. And I, for one, am one of those people that tries every single day to make sure that those traditions and customs continue, remain with us, because they are one of the connections to our past as to why we behave today, especially in the seaman-like professions, why we continue to observe customs, traditions, even laws and regulations that go back thousands of years. Last Sunday was Mother's Day, and I did not recognize it in last week's broadcast because we were doing the Give Big, and I take this opportunity to thank everyone who contributed not only to the Voice of Vashon, but also to all of the other organizations that we had on the programs. But because I was doing interviews of Island Do-Goods rather than my regular program, I did not recognize Mother's Day, but I do so here today. And I spent the day with my daughter over in beautiful, bountiful Bellevue. And we recognized the mothers no longer with us, as well as two who were with us for that particular celebration. It was a wonderful day, and I remain, as always, so grateful for the constancy and the constant love and attention and respect that comes from the members of my own family. I've talked about that before, and I say that I am indeed the most fortunate of men, and that is absolutely true. This coming weekend, we celebrate two different events. On the 15th of May, Saturday the 15th of May, is Armed Forces Day, and it is in particular to honor all of those who are serving on active duty today. In my own service, there are men and women in the Coast Guard who are serving far, far away from our coasts, and so the words Coast Guard always bring up the question of why is the Coast Guard serving in South China Sea, in the Black Sea, in the Mediterranean, in the Arctic, in the Antarctic? Why are we in all of those places? The simple and flip answer to that is that the Coast Guard is the armed force around which the Navy musters in times of danger. And we have, of course, been that service since 1790. And today, on Armed Forces Day, on Saturday, the 15th of May, we will have the Coast Guard cutter Hamilton is serving in right now. She has just finished a mission working with the Ukrainian Navy. And, of course, Ukraine has gotten a lot of political attention over the last few years. The small but active and very efficient Navy that the Ukraine has, trains in particular with the U.S. Coast Guard, because the missions are often the same. They are not necessarily just training for war, but also carrying out all of the traditional missions that the Coast Guard has done since 1790, including search and rescue and interdiction of bad substances and bad people. So Hamilton right now is assigned to the 5th Fleet, which has its headquarters in Naples. I hope I've got that right. I need to look at an organization chart to see where all of these fleets and headquarters are. The one I know, because I served in it myself, was 7th Fleet out in Westpac. So the other event which comes, I'm going to get back to Hamilton in a minute, but the other event that comes on the 15th of May is the Peace Officers Memorial Day. I don't know how long this particular event has been on the national calendar, but what I do know is that the Commander-in-Chief has ordered that all flags in the federal establishment will be flown at half-staff during the Saturday. So it is not because we've had another round of shootings. It is not because of anything other than to remember those peace officers who have fallen flags in the line of duty. So both of those events on the 15th of May, and if you see flags at half staff, that's what it will be for. Going back to Hamilton, we have always had a Hamilton in the fleet. The current Hamilton is a relatively new ship. She is the fourth in a line of ships that we call national security cutters. They are over 400 feet long. They're very capable ships, and they are about the size of a destroyer that were built between the two world wars. They're smaller than a Burke-class destroyer, but they are far larger than a Fletcher. So we've always had a Hamilton. This one is the fifth of the class, of the name, rather. And the third Hamilton was torpedoed and sunk during the Battle of the Atlantic in World War II. So as we will always have a Hamilton, soon we will have another Ingham. The third Hamilton was a sister to my Ingham, and my Ingham, of course, I am proud to say, is still afloat. She is a museum ship now down in Key West, and I will be going. I am her senior living captain, and I will be going to Key West in September for the reunion of all of the people that sailed in here, and I hope that there will be some of the people that were there along with me in my Vietnam crew. The marine traffic for today, sitting out on the anchorage at right off of Captain's Quarters, is an unusual ship. Not unusual in the type of vessel, she's a container ship, but unusual in that she is sitting on the anchorage, because we very seldom get container ships sitting on that particular anchorage. So I looked her up in marine traffic, and she is London Express. She belongs to Hapag-Lloyd. Now, Hapag-Lloyd is one of the very old German shipping companies, goes back to the beginning of the days of steam. And she began her life, she's about 23 years old, not coming to the end of her life. She's got a long way to go if she is taken care of, and the Germans traditionally take really good care of their ships, their merchant fleet. She was originally registered in Germany, but not very long ago, her registration was changed to Bermuda. One of the first places that I went as a cadet in Eagle was to Bermuda. I am particularly fond of that lovely, lovely place. And it is one of those flags which companies shift to because they're able to man a little bit less than they would have to under the German flag. Their costs are a little bit less. So she's been sitting there now for several days, and she is declaring, according to marine traffic, that she's headed to the port of Seattle rather than going to the port of Tacoma. So several unusual things about her, and the fact that she is, as a container ship, is sitting there rather than the usual bulk carrier, tells me that she is could well be waiting for crew. She has a minimum manning level. She cannot sail without the certificated number of people. And she may be waiting to fill out her crew. She, belonging to a company like Hapag-Lloyd, is highly unlikely that she has unpaid bills. So I'm pretty sure that it's something like she needs a few people to be flown in, and then she will pick up her, she's riding right now to her starboard bower. And yesterday they were hosing down the cable. It's really chain, but I adhere to the old term cable because, of course, anchor lines, when we first started anchoring ships, which was at the first time that man straddled a log, was that she was hosing that off, which made me believe that she was probably going to heave around. And hawse, not house, hawse the anchor, and then take off for Seattle. Well, she's still there. So further questions to be answered. I did an interview during the week for, as a promotion for an event that's going to happen toward the end of this month with the Heritage Museum, an organization that I have been involved with indirectly. I don't sit on the board, but I have been involved with at least one of their exhibits. And they're having a big event toward the end of this month, and I did a promotion for it. And I was talking to Dr. Bruce Hallman. I've had Dr. Hallman on the program with me. He is a highly respected and much admired by me historian. And one of the places that he goes is to New Zealand. And New Zealand is where all of the expeditions on the McMurdo side, the Ross Ice Shelf side of the Antarctic continent, started out. Now many of them from deep freeze go from Hobart, Tasmania, but that's another story for another time. And so we were talking a little about New Zealand, and that reminded me of an interesting fact about New Zealand and the Kiwis, which I may have said on here, but if I have, then you're just going to have to bear with me. The so far as I'm aware, the New Zealand national anthem is the only national anthem that is sung in two languages, Maori and English, and the Maori language version is always sung first, and then it is almost always sung right after the United Kingdom national anthem, God Save the Queen, because Her Majesty the Queen is also the Queen of New Zealand. I just interspersed that with my other comments today, because I love New Zealand, and I always am touched when I hear both the Maori and then the English version of God Save Our New Zealand. Over the week, the Coast Guard cutter Maui sent out some warning shots down in the near the Straits of Hormuz. She was being, along with several other ships that were working in a, probably was a task unit. She was working with them, and she was approached very close aboard. The closest was about 150 yards by these high-speed Iranian speedboats. And so she got off about 15 rounds. And then when they weren't paying any attention, she got off another 15 rounds. I assure everyone who listens that Actions like this are both very carefully calibrated, and they are also allowed and, in fact, required by what are known as the rules of engagement. In every conflict, the commanders promulgate, as part of their operations order, an annex called the Rules of Engagement. And these rules of engagement tell the commanding officers what they can and what they cannot do, what they always can do if it becomes absolutely necessary is to defend the ship, to fight the ship and defend the ship if it becomes necessary to prevent her from being captured. We are not going to have any more pueblos in this country. So Maui is a Coast Guard cutter of the island class. All of them in that class are named for islands. And and they are 110 feet long. They were built by a shipyard here in the United States by the name of Bollinger down in the Gulf Coast. And they are all of them now being retired. Maui is still on active duty and will be retired shortly. The others that are out there, there are five of them, five sisters working together in the Persian Gulf. And all of them under Navy operational control. They have their own commanding officer. They have their own Coast Guard crew, their own Coast Guard captain. They fly the Coast Guard ensign. And we also provide the boarding teams that go on Navy ships when it's necessary to board any vessels in international waters. And that's exactly what happened in my next item. In the Arabian Sea, the USS Monterey, which is a guided missile cruiser, interdicted and boarded a vessel which turned out to be stateless, meaning that she had no documentation, no flag, saying that she belonged to a particular country. The boarding was carried out by a Coast Guard boarding team, and all of the ships, so far as I'm aware, all of the Navy vessels out there carry a Coast Guard boarding team. And the Coast Guard boarding team boarded this, and they found that the boat, which was a dhow, spelled D-H-O-W, very similar in construction to the junks that we interdicted in Vietnam, and I'm going to talk about that in just a minute. So the Monterey with their Coast Guard shipmates boarded this dhow, and they found an enormous cache of weapons that probably, we don't know for sure yet, but probably were destined for Yemen. What was remarkable to me about this story is the similarity between the boarding of dhows, of junks that we did in Operation Market Time in Vietnam. And I was part of that. My ship, the Ingham, was one of the ships on the gun line. And besides firing gunfire support missions for troops on ashore, we also did a number of boardings, interdicting junks coming down from the north and inspecting them for people and for arms. The operation was called Market Time. It included Coast Guard patrol boats way, way inshore, the ships like my own, larger cutters farther out. And the operation was so successful that it pushed a lot of the resupply from the north to the south over onto the Ho Chi Minh Trail. So the similarity of this, it would seem to me that if we're going to be doing interdictions for in the Arabian Sea and the Persian Gulf, that all we need to do is dust off, find in musty files, the operations order for Operation Market Time. I'd be happy to go back onto active duty. My sea bag is packed. Go back on active duty and function as an advisor to Commander Fifth Fleet to show them how they could set up a Market Time similar operation. Alas, I suspect that probably my recall to active duty in any case is probably not going to happen. The in domestic news, which is a little bit troublesome to me, and interesting to see how it all turns out. The Biden government has approved the establishment of a very large wind farm off of Martha's Vineyard. And there are right now in the permit approval, there are 62 wind turbines that are going to be put up out off of Martha's Vineyard. And now comes the competition with commercial traffic, with fishermen, with recreational boating, with power companies. When one or more of these things blows over or they lose blades, because of all the things that can happen to man, things that man has built mechanical, there's some way that they can fall apart. We've seen it happen again since the beginning of time with ships, and I suspect we're going to see it with these windmills. Anyway, what is the troubling part to me is that the operator of this whole big system, as part of the permit approval, has agreed to pay in advance many, many millions of dollars of compensation to fishermen for proposed losses. Now, this is the first time that I can think of where a fund has been set up to compensate for people for losses from some particular activity. And I await with barely concealed anticipation to see how all of this is going to work out, and in particular how the legal parts of it are going to be worked out. All of you lawyers in Admiralty have just gotten another pun time here, another windfall. The magazine for today is going to be the Rolls-Royce and Bentley Driver, a magazine that comes from the UK. And I confess here, although I drive another motor car, also built in Europe, in Germany, but I confess here a fascination from childhood with Rolls-Royce motor cars in particular. And so I was over at the Barnes & Noble store in Tacoma, and there is a merciful God in his heaven. They are not closing. And in fact, Barnes & Noble there told me that they may be opening a new store over in the Kent Valley. So that's hopeful to me that maybe when the batteries run out in Kindles, that they will go to the electronics recycle and we will see the restoration of bookstores. We have a wonderful little bookstore right here on the island. So anyway, I went to Barnes & Noble and I went over to their great magazine section and I saw this copy of Rolls-Royce and Bentley Driver and I picked it up and I bought it. And I opened it up and so immediately did come to mind the ultimate accessory for those. I suppose you have to be a Rolls owner in order to buy one of these. For anyone seeking, I'm reading now, I'm quoting from the Rolls-Royce and Bentley Driver. For anyone seeking the ultimate in shooting stick style luxury, Rolls-Royce has just added the Pursuit seat to its accessories range, bringing what the company calls ease and style to clients' ever diversified lifestyles. Now, this thing is what the Brits call a shooting stick. It's a stick that has a little platform on the top of it. You push it into the ground, and rather than have a folding chair that you take with you, you take this little shooting stick, it folds up, you open it up, you stick it in the ground, and then you sit on it. So now the Rolls-Royce company has to carry on. There is a discreet pocket in the outer leather seat, ideal for storing tickets at any motorsport event, while a slim aluminum torch, finished with the double R logo, is stored in the hinge. I'm passing over the rest of this to get to the price. It is bought at the Rolls-Royce boutique at dealerships worldwide, with prices starting at around £6,500 sterling. I leave it to you to convert from pound sterling to dollar to dollars at about a dollar, maybe $1.35, something like that. So I am not in the market for Rolls. However, should a 1910 Silver Ghost present itself for $250, I'd probably go ahead and pick it up. The book for today is one that I have mentioned before, and it's one that I read once a year to remind myself of the perils and dangers, privileges of command, and it's called The Cruel Sea by Nicholas Montserrat. Nicholas himself served in corvettes. It's about corvettes in the Battle of the Atlantic in 1940, from 1940 to 1943. And corvettes were small ships. They were based on originally based on whale catchers, and they were incredibly wet, incredibly rough on the crew, but they were easily constructed, and they were all of them named for flowers. So the name that Nicholas gave to the corvette in The Cruel Sea is a little bit of a play on words, because all flowers, there is no such flower as the compass rose. The compass rose is the face of a traditional magnetic compass, and even today the face of it is still called the compass rose, and it's called that because originally the decoration of them resembled a rose opened out. And so there not being a real flower called the compass rose, of which I'm aware anyway, but there, but he used this as to create a ship that did not exist except in his book, with a name which I think is absolutely beautiful, and I love the idea that he used that as just a little bit of a seamanlike and nautical play on words. So the only remaining corvette of which I'm aware is a Canadian one. The Canadians also operated them, and I have a friend who is now across his own bar who sailed in Canadian corvettes during World War II. The last remaining corvette on both sides of the Atlantic is Her Majesty's Canadian ship Sackville, and she has been restored to her original configuration as she sailed in the during the war. And I neglected to find out exactly where she's located. I will do that, and I will pick it up for my next broadcast. And my next broadcast will be indeed the next one, because here we are once again at the end, far too quickly, of our time together. And so for all of you who have people for whom you are responsible and accountable, if they are on the medical list, do everything that can be done to have them return to duty, and you take care of yourself, because each of us who have other people for whom we are responsible have the responsibility to take care of ourselves so that we can fulfill all of the duties that that we should, that we must, and that we can. So with that, this is your Captain Joe once again, and as always, from the captain's chair on the Voice of Vashon, streaming live all over the world on voiceofvashon.org and 101.9. We never say goodbye. We say until we meet again, and this is your Captain Joe, always from the chair and on station and watching properly.